a connection made each time you plan a meal, or if you go for a run, or you go to bed. Simple things. And doctors who practice what's called lifestyle medicine say making good choices, smart choices when it comes to those efforts, could actually make a world of difference with your health, not just in general. I mean, obviously, yes, and we'll talk about that. But we're starting to see more headlines about how to protect against the worst consequences of having COVID-19. And we want to emphasize, there is no cure for COVID-19. Until we see herd immunity, or more likely a vaccine, maybe a really effective antiviral, the coronavirus will be a public health threat. But lifestyle medicine doctors say if you adopt a plant-based diet, exercise regularly, get good sleep, you could quickly reduce your risk for about 80% of chronic health conditions and even reverse some of them. And that means if you do contract the coronavirus, your immune system might be better able to fight it. In a recent interview with Bill Maher on HBO, Dr. David Katz argued the case for lifestyle medicine during a pandemic, saying, quote, "What this pandemic has done has turned America's chronic health liabilities into an acute threat. The very things that we're always telling people to do to promote their long-term health actually do fortify your immunity against this virus. There's never been a better time for Americans to get healthy," end quote. And locally, Dr. Ted Barnett has been promoting lifestyle medicine for years. His team at the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute has offered several webinars in recent weeks about how the practice and mitigation of risk of the severe effects of COVID-19 could happen based on how you live your life and what you eat and what you do. And he joins us this hour to discuss why he thinks now is a good time to adopt a lifestyle medicine approach to living. Dr. Barnett, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Evan. How are you doing?
Good. Listen, if I'm going to read every...
Stay healthy.
I'm okay for now. Look, and you know, I mean, and I also tell family and friends, you know, you can do all the right things, and unless you fully eliminate risk, which is hard to do, you know, you could still get sick. I'm not a big fan of sort of playing the blame game if people are doing the right things, but I also think, you know, it's important that we try to minimize risk, and that's kind of what we're talking about this hour. Right. If I read every one of your titles, by the way, I'm not going to have any more time to talk to you, but I'm going to try to go real quick. I'm going to go real quick. You're the founder and the CEO of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Group, the founding president of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, a board member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and a partner of Borg and Eyde Imaging. How's that?
That's correct. You got it.
That's a lot.
It's
a lot. So let me...
Well, thank you.
I want to start by asking you about... Let's get right on coronavirus and COVID first here. And I want to ask you, if we talk about plant-based eating... plant-based lifestyle and these kind of habits, you know, I know some will call it veganism, some don't like the term, but whatever. Is it over-promising to say that you could be protecting yourself against the worst effects against COVID-19?
So that's a great question. And we know that the people who are at greatest risk are those, greatest risk from having a poor outcome or death from the COVID-19 are those with chronic underlying conditions, such as diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, obesity. And we also know that those are the same conditions that are most sensitive to lifestyle medicine treatments. We see very good and fairly rapid responses when people do make dramatic lifestyle changes that we recommend. You know, whether they can get the benefit, you know, by suddenly making a change now in the middle, you know, while they're infected, I don't think anyone can demonstrate that. And we certainly wouldn't make that claim. But, you know, you mentioned Dr. David Katz, and I thought he said something really interesting in that interview with Bill Maher, which is that the timeline for harm has been sped up. So getting people to make big changes to avoid chronic illness is a hard sell. But if we can get, but if they see that this is something that has a shorter timeline, you know, impending doom, they may be more persuadable. And so this is, we hope, a teachable moment.
So, Ted, help me, you know, kind of work through my own psychology on this, because I admit, you know, you see a lot of promises during a crisis and, you know, you see a lot of pitches for, you know, try this, go this, and, you know, it'll protect you, et cetera. And I become this inherent skeptic. But then I think, you know, this pandemic could go on for a year or more. And, you know, let's say right now you are someone who is overweight and you've got, you know, hypertension, you have perhaps other cardiovascular issues, maybe you've got some heart issues. If you changed your exercise, your sleep, and your eating habits today and you got the virus tomorrow, you may not get much of a benefit from that. But if you got the virus 9 months from now, I guess you might. I mean, is that also fair?
Sure. Sure. I think, you know, we'd have to do a randomized controlled trial, which is always hard with people, you know, out in the real world. But I think it's a pretty safe assumption that you're certainly not going to be doing any harm to yourself. And, you know, I think it probably would help you mitigate the worst effects of COVID-19. And we know it will help you mitigate the effects of those underlying conditions generally. So, you know, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, they're all associated with suffering and premature death. So I think that even if they didn't do anything for COVID-19, which I think they probably would, we know that you will reduce your risk from these other for other reasons.
Sure. And looking at the New York State Department of Health on COVID-19 fatalities, here are the top 10 comorbidities. Mm-hmm. 89.2%, by the way, of total fatalities in the state of COVID-19 have at least one comorbidity. And the top 10 are number one, hypertension, number two, diabetes, number three, hyperlipidemia, number four, coronary artery disease, number five, dementia, number six, renal disease, number seven, COPD, number eight, atrial fibrillation, number nine, cancer, and number 10, stroke. How much of that list do you look at and say, you know, absent even COVID-19, we can work on that for you with lifestyle medicine?
Right. So I would say we have a couple of slam dunks. One of them is obesity and the other is diabetes. We see very rapid results with people with diabetes. So we have this 15-day whole food plant-based jumpstart that we've been running now for a year and a half. Over 400 people have gone through it around the country. And I'll just give you an example of a 61-year-old gentleman who came to us September 2018 with a hemoglobin A1C of 12.6. Now, that means that his blood sugars were in the low 300s for the last 3 months. And, you know, your blood sugar should be under 100. So he was a really, really out-of-control diabetic, or patient with diabetes. He was not on any medication. His doctors were all telling him he needed to go on medication. So he went through our jump start, and within 3 months, his hemoglobin A1C dropped from 12.6 to 6.0. So basically, kind of a pre-diabetic range. And then last August, so less than a year later, his hemoglobin A1C is now 5.4, meaning if he goes to the doctor now who doesn't know him, they'll say, well, you don't have diabetes. So this is all just with lifestyle changes. He lost 70 pounds. And these are the kinds of dramatic results that we see. We like our short version of this, the 15-day jumpstart, because it shows people how quickly their bodies can heal. And I think it's very motivating when they find out. I call it motivational testing. We test people on day one and on day 15, and they say, really, my cholesterol dropped 50 points in 2 weeks? I didn't know that was possible. And a lot of doctors don't realize that's possible. So, you know, as far as heart disease and other things that are a little harder to measure, we know we have an effect on those, but they're not, you know, the measurement's not quite as dramatic.
I want to talk a little bit about obesity because you bring it up here.
Sure.
So let me sort of kind of peel back a little bit and kind of let listeners know something that happens a lot when we talk health, medicine, and obesity. Generally, the pattern sounds something like this. A subject comes up, obesity comes up, and I get a set of feedback that comes from social media and emails, and some of the feedback sounds like this. Evan, it's 2020, and you can be healthy at any size. You've got to stop shaming obesity. You have to stop with this old mentality that, you know, we can't body shame people. We have to respect people and how they live and what they look like. And you can be healthy at any weight, at any size. And just looking at weight doesn't tell you anything. And that, you know, sort of get with it and stop shaming. And then I get feedback from people who, sometimes even people in the medical community who say, boy, this has become really sensitive. And, you know, we have to be able to speak honestly about obesity. But every time we do that, somebody gets upset with us or says that we are unfairly shaming people. And so I get like this cross section and some people are saying, no, you got to tell the truth on obesity. You got to get real here. Don't be PC. Be honest. And then others say, don't shame. Where should we be on this, Dr. Burnett?
Sounds like you have the same problem the governor has, right? You can't win. You know, tell people to stay in and they want to get out. You tell people that they should go out and then they get blamed for, you know. Anyway, we just need to be give the facts and be scientific about it. And I think people have to make their own decisions. And that list of 10 that you just mentioned for where did obesity end up on? It was on the list, right?
Hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, coronary artery right. disease, dementia, renal disease, COPD, atrial fibrillation, cancer, stroke.
Okay, so obesity itself is not on the list. But of that, I have definitely heard from my colleagues that most of the patients that are having problems are obese, and they would probably have those other, maybe obesity is not considered an underlying condition, but it's certainly associated with diabetes and heart disease and cancer. So I think obesity itself should be thought of as a risk factor for a poor outcome with COVID-19. I get it. It depends where you come down philosophically. But I think people should be given the facts and then make their own decisions based on that. But, we certainly, many of the people come to us are there because they want to lose weight. And we tell them, well, we're really not here to help you lose weight. We're really here to help you get healthy. But losing weight is going to decrease your odds of having that diabetes and heart disease and stroke.
Do you think you can be healthy at any weight, healthy at any size?
I don't think so. Certainly once you reach a certain weight, there are just things that happen just because of the excess weight. So we see people with, leg swelling and varicose veins, and they get, chronic venous insufficiency in their legs, and so and clots. They have their joints start to wear out. I would say that obesity leads to premature aging for the most part, and it's definitely, and it's associated with, I don't think you can be healthy once you've crossed a certain line.
Okay, so it sounds to me like what you're asking us to do is to be direct about the facts while still being sort of supportive and loving about it, not shaming about it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not people's fault. We live in a toxic environment, right? We have created a culture that puts all this fast food out there that's very addictive. We live in an environment where getting off the couch is not always our first choice, or, starting an exercise program may seem, unpleasant or, not something people want to do. But once people start, once people, realize we live in a toxic environment, that our Neanderthal brain is being, basically getting a fix all the time. And we just need to understand that that's what's happening. It's not our fault. We were born into this environment, but we just need to recognize it for what it is and recognize that some of the things that are going to make us happiest and healthiest in the long run may not feel like an easy choice at the beginning.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you have changed, especially your lifestyle, your eating habits during the pandemic, by the way, for good or for ill, this is a time to sort of be aspirational, perhaps, to think about our health in the long term and the short term. And if you've got questions about a plant-based eating and benefits, or, particularly during a pandemic, if you're finding it easier or harder to do that, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. All right, Dr. Barnett, you mentioned the 15-day whole food plant-based jumpstart. If people want to do it, how do they do it?
They can just go to our website, Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, and there's information there on the site. We've obviously had to pivot because we had been running this with groups of 24 people in our office once a month for the last 18 months. And now we just started doubling up. We've been doing it twice a month because it's been very popular. A lot of doctors have been referring their patients to it, and a lot of patients have been telling each other about it. But now we've made it completely online and using Zoom calls. So there is still social support. We don't advocate social distancing. We advocate physical distancing. Socially, we need to all be together and work together and, cultivate those relationships. And one way that we do it is by having these Zoom calls where people get together on for the group part of the program. It basically meets on three Saturdays. That's how we run it now. But as it becomes, as we have to expand, we'll expand the days as well. Lab testing has been a big part of it. I mentioned that we do the finger sticks on day 1 and day 15. We're not obviously doing that now. But if people want to go out to a lab and get their labs drawn, that's certainly a possibility.
Do you think that the finger sticks and a little bit more of the option of doing some of this stuff in person, is that going to change anytime soon?
Oh, that we can do more in person? We're not planning on being able to get together in the near future. It's going to be at least a year before things go back to normal, where people are going to want to be crowded into the same room. And whether or not they want it, I'm not sure it'll be responsible. So, you know, we'll have to play it by ear. We're certainly ready to go back to our old system. We'd love to do that. And we actually have been licensing doctors around the country to do the program, which, of course, is all on hold right now.
It's interesting. I've seen some pretty funny and probably accurate memes lately from people who say, you know, during quarantine, I miss my friends. And then my friends say, hey, let's FaceTime. And I say, nah, I'm going to watch a show on Netflix. Or they say, you know, I'm going to do this new exercise routine at home. Nah, today I think I'm just going to watch a show on Netflix. And it's easy to have these aspirations, but sometimes psychologically, you know, a lot of us are dealing with the isolation. You kind of feel some malaise. On the other hand, for people who are trying to jumpstart, it does sound like you are seeing more interest than typical in this program. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people realize, you know, this may be a big reset, right, for America in a lot of ways that we can't, you know, a lot of it is in ways that we can't predict. But I think in terms of personal habits, I think people have time to sort of sit down and evaluate themselves. And I know personally I'm getting outside a lot and exercising a lot because I live out in the countryside and, you know, it's great. So I know a lot of people with little kids are suffering because they have their kids at home. And, you know, everybody's experiencing this differently. But I do think it's a great opportunity for resetting. You know, rice and beans are great storage foods. And you can store those in your house. You know, like when you go out to the supermarket, pick those up and, you know, get some frozen vegetables and check out some recipes. And, you know, I think it's a time to really make some positive changes.
I know I do this to you every time, but let's do it, especially let's do the quarantine edition of this question for Dr. Ted Barnett, who is the founder and who's the founder and CEO of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Group. People want to know, especially if they're thinking about changing what they eat, going plant-based, et cetera, they're always asking, well, what did you eat? Well, especially during the quarantine, give me your last breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Oh, boy. My wife is listening to this. So I better get it right. For breakfast, I know what I had because it's always the same. I had oatmeal with blueberries and ground flaxseed and some cinnamon on it, a little bit of maple syrup. And she's writing me a message right now.
She's quizzing you. That's good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, we usually have, I think last night we had a pasta dish with lots of greens. Yeah, there was some tempeh and broccoli rabe. That was last night's dinner. So if people aren't familiar with broccoli rabe, it's a great kind of form of broccoli that's got a lot of greens in it. So one of our favorites. By the way, there's wild greens right now, which I hope people don't go out and start picking them without studying it first. But if you know your weeds, garlic mustard is an incredible, incredibly prolific invasive weed that's coming up right now, and it's delicious. So other people know about how to collect wild greens, I highly recommend that. You know, one of the things that we advocate is getting greens 6 times a day. I know it sounds a little crazy, but especially for people who are trying to reverse their heart disease and get their blood vessels happy again, we recommend that you nibble on some greens before and after every meal. So before and after breakfast, after lunch, and after dinner. I tell people when I'm commuting into work, I have it on the seat next to me. I just have a little container of greens.
I'm glad you bring this up, though, Dr. Barnett, because and Betsy and Brighton, hang there on the phone. If you've emailed the program, we'll get to it coming up here. I learned a hard lesson early in the quarantine because I wanted to really like try to set my trips to, you know, to pick up food to once, I don't know, every 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, I really don't want to be in public spaces if I don't have to be. And so, you know, I did a couple of quick Google searches and found that, yes, you can freeze spinach and you can freeze arugula. Well, not really. You can, but if you then unfreeze it, it is a soppy, wilted mess. And I learned that sort of the hard way. And so what I find is, when I can pick up food, I am crushing greens for days before they're going to start to turn. But if I really want to stretch and extend between trips to the store, I feel like what I end up missing is some of that fresh green. I'm able to freeze.
Right.
I cut bell peppers into strips, and I freeze those. Those are great. No problem with that. It's the leafy greens that if you really want to extend visits between picking up food, I am struggling with, and I'm curious if you have any advice for that.
I will in a second, but my wife just reminded me that we have a blog on our website on rocklifemeds.com. It's a blog on shopping during the time of COVID. So it does address those issues about
What's the website again?
It's Rochester Lifestyle Medicine.
Okay. Rochester Lifestyle Medicine blog for food in the time of COVID.
If you just go to the blog, it's one of its most recent blogs. And so the question is, what to do about greens? Well, are you freezing them before you cook them?
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
I could probably blanch them, right? Blanch them first?
I would just cook them and freeze them. I mean, they're going to be a soggy mess once you cook them anyway, right? Because
what I wanted to avoid. I love them in my smoothies. I love just fresh arugula salads.
Oh, I see. In your smoothies, it shouldn't matter, right?
Yeah, I've gotten better results out of freezing spinach and just popping it straight into a smoothie, so that works. But in terms of having like fresh greens for a salad, which I love, I'm less successful.
That's going to be trickier.
Yeah. But I'm with you on the beans and rice. Lots of beans. Beans cheap and, absolutely. So, listeners, I'm starting to see piles of questions come in. So let's start to work through these for Dr. Ted Barnett. And if you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Connections at WXXI.org. Betsy in Brighton first on the phone. Go ahead, Betsy.
Hi. I had a question regarding dairy products and calcium. I eat primarily a plant-based diet. Occasionally I have fish, but it's gotten to maybe once every couple of weeks at the most. But my doctor had recommended that I still have dairy products at least a couple of times a day for my bone health. So I was interested in your input on that. I do take supplements of calcium and vitamin D, but he felt that wasn't adequate.
Right. So that's a great question. It's a very common question. So we do not think you need to be getting calcium from dairy. The cow doesn't get her calcium from dairy, right? She gets it from where? From green leafies. And the countries that have the highest osteoporosis rates actually have the highest dairy intake. So it's not like increasing dairy is going to help with osteoporosis. There's just no scientific evidence for that. Calcium supplements are actually no longer recommended because they're associated with cardiac events. So Annals of Internal Medicine a couple of years ago came out with an article. We no longer recommend calcium supplements. So basically, if you're trying to deal with osteoporosis, which is, I assume, what your doctor is trying to deal with, You're basically dealing with a couple of dietary factors, none of which have to do with dairy, but can be helped with greens. So greens have lots of calcium. Greens have magnesium, which you need for bones. Greens have vitamin K, which you need for strong bones. And you do need vitamin D for strong bones. And in Rochester, it's hard to get enough sunshine. If you can get enough sunshine, you don't really need vitamin D. But we recommend that you get 1,000 to 2,000 units of vitamin D every day. So that's the one supplement that we do recommend. We don't recommend supplements generally in our practice, but we do encourage you to get plenty of greens. Now, you don't need as much calcium as the official recommendation. The official recommendation is, 1,200 milligrams a day. People who get 500 or 600 milligrams a day of calcium do fine with their bones. The other thing you really want to do is go on an exercise program. Do you do weight-bearing exercise?
Yeah, some and some Pilates. I broke my ankle, so it's been a little bit harder to do some exercises like I used to.
Sure. So you really, really want to take that seriously. The weight-bearing exercise, resistance training, it doesn't have to, obviously have a broken ankle. So, using other body parts, especially, using your spine, because that's what you're worried about. Hips and the spine are the, areas that we worry about people breaking with osteoporosis. But osteoporosis is not a disease of dairy deficiency, because if it were, people like the Okinawans, who don't really have any dairy in their diet at all, mm-hmm. would have terrible osteoporosis because they don't get dairy, but they are the longest lived people on the planet. So you look at places where they don't get much dairy, they have great bones, they live a long time. Dairy is associated with various and reproductive cancers. So take a look at our website or go to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine website, pcrm.org, and you can look up osteoporosis there.
Could you repeat that again?
Yeah, pcrm.org, and for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, good luck to you, Betsy. Thanks very much. Let me get Ed in Bergen next. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, Evan and Dr. Burnett. This is Ed Frazier. I'm out in Frazier's Garlic Farm down here in Churchville. And I just wanted to make a comment that you can get fresh greens that are organic, et cetera, certified organic, right here in the Rochester area. There are a number of farms that are growing them right now and selling them right now. One of them that comes to mind is Growing Family Farms. If you go to their website, you can order online and you can go right and pick them right up, whatever you order. So we're talking Swiss chard, talking arugula, we're talking kale, we're talking spinach, and it is very tasty and nutritious, of course.
Great.
Thank you very much, Ed, and I do appreciate that. And that is a great point. I mean, you don't just have to be at a grocery store to find fresh greens, and there's a lot of great farms and markets doing really, really great stuff, and I appreciate that very much. Okay, Scott in Prattsburg next. Go ahead, Scott.
Thank you, Evan, for taking my call. I have a question and also a comment. First, the comment, I have a good friend that lost 20 pounds in 2 months on a greens diet, and she posted on Facebook some of the plates she put together, and they made you drool. They look so good. But my question is, what about fish? I always heard fish was good for you. Do you recommend fish with your diet?
So let's just go back to your friend on the greens diet. I hope she's eating more than just greens. I mean, greens are great. People don't get enough of those. But we want people to go on a lifestyle that is something they can sustain. And obviously humans can't just live on greens. So, we advocate a low-fat, whole food, plant-based diet, which is something that you can go on for, indefinitely for the rest of your life. And people don't feel deprived on that. And we see similar weight loss. We have, our communications director has lost 115 pounds over the last 3 years, and it's kept it off, and it does not feel deprived. So, you can definitely do it. You want to, choose a plan that's sustainable, though. So I'm assuming she wasn't just eating just greens. Now, your other question about fish.
She wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But fish was not on her diet. I was just wondering if that could be a possibility.
Right. So fish is, problematic. We don't recommend it. It's first of all hard to get fish that's not contaminated. So most fish from the ocean now are, have mercury in them, or PCBs, and the mercury comes from all the coal-fired power plants around the world. And so that's how the fish end up with mercury in them. The actual animal protein itself is not of benefit. It's actually hard on your kidneys. People talk about the omega-3 fatty acids that are in seafood. There's plenty of omega-3 fatty acids in greens, believe it or not. Actually, alpha-linolenic acid is the most common fat on the planet, which is the main omega-3. It's the main omega-3. Because it's in greens and there's so many leaves on the planet. So that's, you want to get lots of leaves. The fish get their omega-3s from algae, either directly or indirectly, by eating smaller fish that have been eating algae. So it's not actually an animal product. It actually comes from the plants themselves. So we don't recommend that. We recommend you get your omega-3 fatty acids from eating lots of green leafies and also from a tablespoon of ground flaxseed or chia seed every day.
What about hemp? How about hemp for an additive?
Yeah, hemp is fine. I don't think hemp is quite the same profile of omega-3s to omega-6s, but it's, it's certainly not unhealthy.
Awesome. All right, thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
The phone call. Danette writes to ask, please ask the doctor why carbs are so addicting. Does it have something to do with dopamine?
Oh, interesting question. So let's talk about carbs, because there are carbs and there are carbs, right? Carbohydrates are not inherently harmful, because the carbohydrates in whole food are the kind of food that we should be eating lots of. So whole grains, potatoes, sweet potatoes, squash, those are carbs, right? But so are, so is white bread and sugar and soda. That's also carbs. But it's obviously a really big difference. We want to be getting our carbs or carbohydrates from whole foods, from natural sources, like the ones I just mentioned, whole grains, squash, all those root vegetables, things like that. And as far as they're being addictive, if you're addicted to squash, great, or sweet potatoes, I'm happy. That's fabulous. I'm assuming the addiction that we're talking about is something more like donuts or something else along those lines. And that is definitely not health food. And it may be that it does have a dopamine, effect that gives people kind of a high when they consume that. So, yeah.
Do you think of it as addictive?
Well, if we're talking about is candy and donuts, then I would think of it as addictive. Hmm. If we're talking about, eating corn on the cob, sweet potatoes, squash, white potatoes are fine. You know, all these things that are full of carbohydrates, that's where you should be getting the bulk of your calories. You don't need that much protein in your diet. You only need about 10% you need about 7 or 8% of your calories to come from protein, actually. And a white potato has 10% calories from protein. A lot of people don't realize that all these things that we think of as starches have all three macronutrients. They have fat, they have carbohydrates, they have protein, and they have to because they're whole foods and they have contained cell walls. So, people always, they're so worried about not getting enough protein that they think, oh, I can't have all these carbs. And so that's really not the point. You should be staying away from soda. That's junk, right? It's just pure sugar. And you should be staying away from donuts and danishes and all those things that really are addictive for people.
Deb writes to say, John Bolton at the public market also does deliveries to neighborhoods. Great source for leafy greens. I'm getting inundated with leafy green advice, so this is great.
I appreciate
that. Yeah. And Kathy just says, Evan, with bone health, it's directly related to whether or not it's used. According to Wolter's Law, bone is put where it's needed and taken away where it's not. If you want healthier bones, pick heavy stuff up and put it back down. Dr. Barnett, what do you say to that?
I love that. It was the point I made earlier. Not to be too anecdotal about it, but I have a friend who's a woman. She's almost 80 years old now. About 10 years ago, she had been on a vegan diet for a long time. Her doctor, about 10 years ago, doctor told her, you've got an osteoporosis on your DEXA scan, and you need to do something about it. So instead of going on, medication that builds bone density through these sort of unnatural pathways, she told her personal trainer to basically beat the heck out of me 6 days out of a week. So she goes to her gym now 6 days a week, and for an hour does these incredible resistance training programs that her personal trainer has developed for her. Her bone density has gone up without medication. She is way stronger now. I mean, the other thing you have to remember is that, the big risk of osteoporosis is that you're going to fall and break something. Or break something and then fall. We don't know always which order it should. But the point is, the more muscular you are, the less likely you are to have some kind of a fall, the less frail you're going to be. So for so many reasons, you really, really want to, as she said, put things down or lift things up and put them back down again, but do that multiple times a day, get into a routine, do it safely. It's hard to go to the gym right now, but I'm sure there's routines that people can do at home by following something online. So I highly recommend, she's absolutely right. Bones are very dynamic organs. They respond to very much to what you ask them to do.
Joel says that's the same reason Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg works out. That's funny. And and he says with 10% drop off, 10 to 15% drop off in the meat supply chain, it's a great time now to go vegan. That is from Joel. 20 seconds, last question. Brody says true Niagen is good for your blood vessels. True Niagen.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. N-I-A-G-E-N-T-R-E. I don't know if that's a supplement or what. Brody, we're going to have to look that up, but I don't know. It doesn't sound like it's actually true food, but I could be wrong. Listen, Dr. Barnett, as we get ready to go here, you see the interest that always comes up when you're on the program, so let people know one more time if they want to find you, whether they want to do the 15-day jumpstart or otherwise.
Sure. So Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, if you just Google that, you'll end up at our website. Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute. We'd love to see you.
What are you eating tonight?
My wife hasn't told me.
Oh, yet. Dr. Barnett, you can cook, man.
I can cook, but I, yeah. Why should I? I got this great cook in the house.
Oh. Quit while you're way behind. Dr. Ted Barnett,
yeah, right.
We always appreciate the phone call and the conversation.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks very much for joining us. He is the founder and CEO of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Group. And founding president of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute. More connections coming up next.
Thank you, Ray.